The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond. The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Enjoy dinner time without the screen time. Pause the internet with our new Sky Broadband Buddy app.
At nearly 9:28 now, 51551. Thank you for all the texts this morning. Much obliged. Maureen Osei, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you doing?
It's really good to talk to you. I suppose we need to get down to the business in some ways. You're from Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2015, you went for a short break to the UK. Is that right?
I did. I went for 3 months.
And tell me a bit about the nature of that trip and what ultimately happened.
Well, I went over to do some work with some colleagues back home in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And after the 3 months, in that 3 months, I had met my husband, my now husband, and I was still kind of making a decision whether I would stay or go, but I gave it some time. And I got headhunted by a company that I love working for, and as a breast care specialist with post-mastectomy. So I took that, and it just seemed to all lead in from there, and I stayed.
What was it about this?
Married.
What was it about this man that he could...
He's gorgeous.
No, go on.
Oh my God, he looks like Denzel Washington, basically. I mean, very easy on the eye, right?
Okay, I have to take your word for that, Maureen. You know,
he's absolutely lovely.
What age were you, if you don't mind the rude question, but I think it's very relevant for our discussion today? When you met your husband?
I was 49.
Right, and can I ask you a little bit about both of your circumstances vis-a-vis previous, had you been married before, any kids, that kind of thing?
I had been married before. I have three young adults in Ireland, and he had been married, but he had no children from his marriage, but he had a daughter from a previous relationship, a young girl.
Okay.
But she didn't live with him. So, he always wanted a family, and... I'd had one.
Yeah.
So I had no intention of ever getting married again, and neither did he.
Life is what happens, as the song says, when you're busy making other plans.
Well, you know, when you're not looking, it's there in front of you too. Sometimes you can be too busy looking too far ahead when what's for you is actually right in front of you under your nose.
Indeed. And so you moved in together, obviously, and you talked about life and what to do with the future and so forth. Who brought up the idea of maybe starting a family together?
Well, he had talked about it very early on, and I had told him that I'd had a hysterectomy, an emergency one, in 2011 when I was 45. Mm. I kept my right ovary. So I told him I couldn't. So that was the funny part of this, because he really liked me and I really liked him, but I couldn't give him the family he wanted. So I felt a bit guilty about that. So I kept breaking up with him.
Did you?
He kept coming back.
And tell me about the breaking up. What was going through your mind? Because you obviously liked this guy. Loved this
He's
man.
Such a wonderful, wonderful person, and he deserved to have a family. He really, really did, that would live with him and have that family environment, because he comes from a big family himself.
Yes.
And I just really wanted him to have what I'd had before. And I know that experience. So I kept trying to break up with him. And I said, please don't text me. Don't contact me. Just please leave me alone. Because I was really, really into this guy. More so than I wanted to admit to myself. But he kept coming back. He kept messaging me. And eventually by 2016, I'd kind of gone back each time and said, okay, you know, this is just it. We're just seeing each other, dinner, you know, just keep it that way. And you can't help the way your heart feels. So by 2016, we decided to spend Christmas together. And that's when he landed it on me that he wanted to spend the rest of his life with me and forfeit the idea of having another family or children.
I'm just so impressed, Maureen, about your kind of altruistic approach to his life and yours in your bid to break up with him. But obviously he was having none of it. And back to that love, what sounds like a lovely Christmas in 2016.
Oh, it was lovely. It was so relaxing. It was just, it was just really, really nice. And I got such a shock when he said it to me. And I said, that is such a big decision to make. And he said, I love you. He said, I'm not prepared to lose you, to sacrifice you, he said, you know. And that was it, because he was 53 nearly at the time.
And you were...
And I was just gone 50 that August.
So what changed?
Well, when he said that to me, you know, there's a huge difference when you know someone loves you for you and not from what they you can give them. And I could not give him something he really wanted. So for him to make that decision, to say he would forfeit everything else just to have me, I knew he loved me dearly. And I love being a mum. And I said to him, how about adoption? He said, no, that wouldn't work for him. And, well, I said, how about surrogacy? You know, it's here in the UK. We can look into that. And at first he said no. And I said, well, don't knock it out. Think about it. So about 2 days later, he said to me, what do you know about it? I said, absolutely nothing. I just saw it online, you know. So he said, OK, have a look at and see what you can find out. So I applied to the UK surrogacy groups. I was coming up against the brick wall because I was 50 now, and it was unethical, seemingly. I applied through clinics in the UK, and they told me it was unethical. And then I was coming up against these brick walls, and, you know, surrogates choose you in the Ukraine, or not in the Ukraine, in the UK. And so you're kind of held that way. And I said, they're not going to give me a chance. There's other people out there that have no children whatsoever. And, you know, they'll give them the chance. So
Can I cut across for a moment? Because I just want to ask you about the word unethical, which just leaps out at me. Who decides or who's you know,
UK.
They said it's unethical for, is it somebody of a certain age? Is it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
At 50, yeah.
Right,
that's
there's
what
a
they deem unethical as 50. There's a cut off point.
Yeah. I see, okay. So on you go.
So during my work as a breast care specialist, I was dealing with a young lady with post-mastectomy, a double post-mastectomy. Mm. I had her in my office for some time, and her sister was with her. So anyway, 2 weeks later, I'm just going to cut all that out. 2 weeks later, one of the clinics I had contacted about doing it, and that there was a fertility doctor, and she noticed my name. And she realised I had been the lady that helped her sister.
Oh.
So she called me and she recommended a clinic abroad. She couldn't help me, but they could recommend off the record. She said, you know, she'd heard of this clinic. They were exceptional in what they do. And in that medical area, fertility and all that. And because I was 50, she said, give them a call. And that was it. I gave them a call and the ball started rolling. But I did research a lot of clinics when I heard about this one. I found tons of them, and I mean tons of them, all offering everything and anything and all sorts of things, and, you know, amazing, amazing things, and no age restrictions. And I'm like, wow. Yeah. And, you know, when you're in that kind of an emotional thing, when someone tells you that, of course, once you've had a hysterectomy and you still have your right over, we can help.
Okay.
I'm like, are you serious? And I rang him, my partner at the time, and I said it to him, and he said, wow. And, that was it. I just said to him, well, there is a catch. We have to be married.
Well, that's some catch.
Well, we were going to spend the rest of our lives together, living
not?
Together.
Absolutely. I understand entirely.
So it was a piece of paper to us, really, because we were crazy about each other anyway. So he says, OK, let's do this. That was it.
So really, at this stage, the baby train had left the station in terms of planning and so on. And I'd love to know about both of you in terms of thinking, well, you've been through it three times, so you knew what was going to be waiting for you, but you would have been much younger then. Your soon to be husband was, you know, he was over 50 at that point. So you're both facing into life with babies, if all going well, at a certain age, not far from my own, and thinking, you know, have I got this in me?
Yes. So basically, we didn't just run into it at that, but we kind of calmed down after the excitement of being told, yes, you can have a baby.
Okay.
We had decided, let's be realistic. Okay.
Yes.
So we both booked in medical consultations for, let's say, a full MOT.
Yes, I understand. Yes.
X-rays, the lot, scans, bloods, you name it. We did that and everything came back crystal clear. He's very fit. He plays a lot of squash, and I'm quite fit, and I would walk a lot a day and would go to the gym, and I like my swimming. So we decided, right, health wise we're okay. So then I said, you know, we need to talk to my family, because that's important to me, and if they say no, it's not happening. So we had, by the time we got to that stage, we had been cleared really by ourselves to go ahead with it. And I said, you know, I've raised three. I'd no problem raising them. You know, how bad can it be? And there wasn't a problem. And so we were cleared. So I spoke to my own children. I they came over to me. I wanted to speak to them face to face. And they came over to me and we told them what we were doing. And my son, who I was concerned about, he's 33. He was 30 at the time, and I said it to him. And he said, "Mom, whatever you want to do," he said, "this is your life." He says, "you've done okay by us." He said, "this is now your life."
Good attitude.
He says, "you do what you want to do."
Okay.
He said, "as long as you feel okay to do it." And that's my concern. He said, "how will you be?" And my two daughters were the same. One of the daughters was very concerned, you know, that, "Mom, what about your health? What about everything that's going, you know, anything could go wrong and this, that and the other." And I said, "well, we've allowed for that as well. So we're going to have six godparents for these babies if we get twins, and people on board that would be able to take care of things." But, you know, his family have a longevity, and
okay.
You know, his father's 96, his mother's 86, and there's no fine sign of the father going anywhere, and all his family live very late. So
okay, so you boxed everything off very neatly in terms of logistics, and when I say logistics, I mean emotional logistics as well as the important office work that needs to be dealt with. And you find yourself then dealing with an agency in Ukraine, isn't that right?
Yes, Maureen, to the Ukraine,
and they have the attitude in the Ukraine. Ukraine is ultimately, there's no age isn't an issue, is that essentially it?
And exactly.
How do you decide on the surrogate, the person who's going to carry the baby? Can you tell me a little bit about that, how that works?
Well, they pick your surrogate, but I had stipulated that I didn't want a young girl of 25 or 26 under that age. I didn't want anybody that age. I'd prefer over 30, actually.
Why was that?
Because, you know, be realistic, Ukraine is Ukraine, and, you know, everybody has an opinion on it. It is a corrupt country, and the poverty is over there. And a lot of these girls that decide to do it, of course, it is for money. There's no getting away from that, and we have to be honest about it. So I didn't want a young girl coming into it to just do it for the money and have no responsibility. Because carrying a baby, even yourself, is a huge responsibility. You have to make serious changes to your life. So I wanted somebody that was mature enough, that had had children herself, and that was looking at it also from the point of view of working with a family like ourselves to give us a baby.
So you asked
for
somebody.
Someone that would carry twins.
I understand. Okay, so you asked for somebody over 30, which you got.
Yes. Yes.
Did you at any point, did you and your husband, because it sounds like you put so much thought into this, did you have, just to use that word, ethical again, did you have ethical issues about paying a woman to carry your baby in Ukraine, or did you feel, this is life, this is what happens in modern science, it's been there since the Bible? Or, I mean, how much thought did you put into that, Maureen?
Well, prior to being in touch with the Ukraine, as I said, I was part of a lot of surrogacy groups, official groups in the social media. And I had spoken to surrogates themselves, and they had said to me, they gave me a different point of view. If I want to carry a baby, I can, and nobody can put me down for it. And as they said themselves, they get their compensation, they get whatever, but they actually enjoyed seeing someone happy and doing that. So it changed my attitude, but I was conscious of the fact that Ukraine is the Ukraine.
Okay.
So I did speak to the clinic and I asked, how much does she get? They told me that the compensation that she would get, I think it was about 14,000. And I said, what about her living, accommodation, all that kind of thing? And if she has children, will there be somebody to help take care of them? And they said, absolutely. So we had put that into the clause that we wanted help, a nanny or something put into place if she had other children. And she did. She had a six-year-old boy. Now, her mum was with her, helping, taking care of her. But during our contract, we paid for everything for her every single month. Her food bills, everything was paid for. And because she was carrying twins, we wanted her to give up work. So that was all catered for as well in the package.
Were you encouraged or otherwise to meet her?
No. And I'll tell you why. There are a lot of clinics that encourage you to meet your surrogate. And I understood when it was explained to me why you shouldn't. You should meet her at the scans. You can talk to her. You can contact her. You can have a relationship with her if you want. But they seriously discourage it because it's an emotional journey for IPs, intended parents. And you can be very much held to ransom by a surrogate that decides to turn the cheek and decide to go against the contract and ask parents for money in between what she's already getting each month. And that can hold you to ransom in a sense of you're not going to want to refuse her in case she decides to act nasty about it and decide to run off and with your baby and our babies and that. So we were not encouraged to have that relationship. However, I met mine at every scan and I loved her. And I remember sitting beside her one day and I really wanted to touch her tummy because it's a very surreal situation to be in. And I remember looking at her, and she was so tiny. She's about 5'1". I'm 5'9", so she's about 5'1". And I said, God, she's tiny. How is she going to carry twins, you know? And then it dawned on me, you know, like, my mother carried 8 children.
Yeah, yeah.
She was only 5 foot nothing. But twins I worried about. She was fine. She was absolutely great. But she took my hand one day, just while she was sitting beside me, out of the blue, put my hand on her tummy to feel the baby's kicking. And I cried. I just cried.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I was like, wow.
That's a moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
In Ukraine, the baby is considered to be the child of... So there's a very strong delineation, and there's no obfuscation in that regard.
There is no room for manoeuvre in the contract, because the surrogate is not related in any way, shape or form to the babies at all. There are babies. So there's a DNA test done after the babies are born, and that proves that the DNA is related to both me and my husband. And then we apply for a birth cert based on those documents. So she has no way of keeping the babies, a legal way of keeping the babies. And, you know, a lot of people are scared about that. But now the journey is over, I realise they don't want to keep the baby. They can't afford to.
Right.
So they're not going to keep your baby. Do you know that kind of way? So, yeah, there's no room for manoeuvre. That is the secure side of it. Plus, your names are on the birth cert. So when you apply, you're applying. Now, we decided to apply through Britain because, yes, it would take longer, to come home. But we live in Britain and we live in London. But the system back home in Ireland is a lot different. So coming to London, we would apply for parental orders, because we're domiciled here, and our birth certs would be issued to us with our names on it. However, in Ireland, that's not the case. The mother, regardless of being matched as DNA, still has to adopt her own child later. It's only the father that's classed as the father.
And are we considered a bit behind the curve in that regard?
So.
Or are we considered, because I don't know enough about this, are we considered to be doing the right thing by, say, a certain amount of the population? I'm not sure about the nuance of this.
Well, I think they are doing a disservice to families, that women that cannot have children.
Okay.
And I know I get slated for that, that it's not your right to have children. But basically, you tell that to a woman that really wants children, that are even in a different situation to me, that have no children. And I think it is very far behind, because if a baby is not related to the woman that has carried her, why, by DNA, should she be classed as the mother? That is actually so wrong on all levels. And you're having a mother that's related to her baby, or even not if they use donor eggs. They initiated that contract. The same in Greece. They initiate a contract. The baby is yours from before it's created by the courts. So in Ireland, they're very, very far behind. And I mean, come on, good Catholic Ireland. Sarah was the first surrogate in the Bible.
Well,
so they want to eliminate that.
Tell me about the birth of your twins.
Well, that was comical.
Where were you? Go on, tell me what happened.
Well, I had gone for every scan. We decided not to go for the 36-week one, or the 34-week one, because I was going to go over a month in advance, because twins can come early. So I was booked to go on the 14th of January, even though the babies weren't due till the 11th of February. And the Ukraine take their holidays until the 10th of January. Christmas doesn't sound until the 10th of January.
Right.
I booked the tickets on the 8th of January to fly over. And my husband then would fly over when the boys would arrive. And basically what happened was, all that weekend, Ryan, when I say I was connected to this entire pregnancy, trust me, I was. I mean, some months I used to have a maternity dress on with the bloated belly I had on me. I know it was all imagination, but still, okay. I felt I was bloated. But I was connected somewhere, and I just kept thinking something's wrong that whole weekend. And I couldn't get touch with anybody in the clinic. Totally forgot I had an emergency number to ring if I needed it. Totally forgot it. So by the time Wednesday came on the 10th, all these emails I'd sent in, Irina decided to reply to me. She said, no, as far as I know, everything is okay. I don't see anything on my desk, but let me call and check her. So that was at 10 o'clock. And at 20 past 10, I get a call back, an email to say, your babies have been delivered today.
Wow.
So I couldn't even catch a flight at that time if I'd got the call earlier that morning. So I flew out that night, and there was my babies the next morning, twins, you know, one nearly 6 pounds and the other one 4.5 pounds.
What was that like, to see them?
Oh my God. And you know, they're so strict over there in the hospital. It's not like Ireland, you know, you run in the door and whatever and go down and see the babies, and you have about 40 family visitors in there. It is not like that. It is like, it's so spotless, you're gowned up and everything. And I wanted to just run straight, and I had an interpreter with me. But the nurses, everybody kept pulling me back and pulling me back, and the language barrier was huge. And I'm like, let me go, my babies are in there. And eventually I got in the door, and I could see them straight off. That's mine. And I was trying to make a beeline for them. They were like, no, you can't. And I'm like, do not even think of stopping me.
Right. You're determined.
Oh, I was. It was like, I was like a lion. I just needed to get in there. Lioness, I just needed my babies. And I picked them up and, oh, my interpreter did a video and I was crying and I could tell which one was which and which was the lively one and which one's the quiet one all through the scans, because we got the scans every month. And you could tell which was the little lunatic and which was the, you know, the little professor, as I call them, you know?
Yeah, if I believe that with twins. You get the kind of wild one and the more reflective one.
Yes.
And the babies stay with the surrogate for how many days?
No, she doesn't see them at all.
Oh.
No, she's in another part, just down the in another corridor, totally cut off from the maternity, because it's not fair to her. So she was in a private room to herself, and they were in a nursery, because they were 5 weeks early.
Right.
So they were in this little nursery off ICU. They weren't in ICU. So every day I visited her and visited the boys. So I'd go in to see the boys at 11 and I'd stay till 4. And then I would, before that, I would go into her and bring in some food and treats and flowers and chocolates and everything.
Sure.
And we'd talk. And she had a section which hadn't been on the agenda. So, of course, I was conscious that she needed more care. But everything was done for her. And then after 5 days, she was released. And then the boys were released into our care.
Into your care. But the surrogate doesn't have contact with the boys in all that time.
Which,
how do you feel about that?
I asked her if she wanted to.
Did you?
I had no problem. Of course I did. I knew it would be hard for her, because remember, I'd had a section, an emergency section on my last daughter, and to not have your baby in your arms after going through that, it's like you've gone through everything, but there's nothing there. That is a totally empty feeling.
Yeah.
So I just said to myself, I remember as being a mum in that situation, and, you know, a section is a section. And I just said, and she said, no, it's okay. She had done surrogacy once before. So she said, it's okay. But when we were back at the apartment, I invited her for the Easter dinner, because it's a big thing to them over there. And she came and she saw the boys and she played with them. And she came back down for dinner and she held one. And I said to her, if it's too hard for you, don't. And she said, no, I'm fine. I am so happy to see you with your baby. She said, it is the proudest moment ever. She said, I am so happy that I did this for you and your husband.
It just feels so, it must be so odd for everyone. And when I say odd, I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. It's surreal for her to say, there you go, I'm delighted for you. And you to say, thank you, and you want to hold the baby you carry, but actually is mine. You know, it is, dare I say, it's a minefield, but one that you seem to have handled with great emotional intelligence.
Oh, I didn't just thank her, Ryan. If you saw us, I put my arm around her and I cried and I said it to her, you have no idea what you've done. She said, yes, I do. I do. I can see it, she said. And I cry thinking, we still talk twice a month, maybe three times a month.
Really?
We still talk.
Okay.
Yeah, and she sends me photographs of her little boy, and he's grown so big now, and we've sent gifts over to her little boy the entire time that she was carrying our babies.
And how old are your boys now?
20 months.
20 months. And what you're what, 53 now?
I'm 53 now.
And your husband, I should stress, your
56.
Husband is 56, because I can't remember. I was only talking about this the other day with somebody who said, how can a woman have a child at that age? And I said, well, don't forget how old Michael Collins' father was, you know, in Ireland when he had. I think he was well into his 70s. And, and therefore, you know, we have to consider all of these things. But how dramatic has it been for you? And I didn't say traumatic, I said dramatic. To have this second phase of parenthood in your world?
Well, as I said in the beginning, I had no idea what it was. I just assumed it would be like when I was in my 20s, and I was 29, I think, when I had my last one. Mm. So I assumed it was all going to be rosy in the garden. I had no idea what it was going to be like with twins. It was full on. And even though I have to say, while I was over in the Ukraine for the 3 months, I had a nanny. And she was with me 24 hours a day, so the clinic supplied that, and a housekeeper. So I had plenty of help, but when I should have been sleeping and leaving it all to her, I couldn't. No, every time they cried, I was there. So I was on the go 24 hours. So I'd be wrecked, but I had great help. So when I came home, I didn't. It was just myself and the hubby for the first 2 weeks. And then we got help. So it was tough, the night times. But you know, as I do say to people, if you can actually get somebody in for a couple of hours at night, once you get your sleep, you can rule the world.
It's a luxury, but if you can afford it, you know, really that takes a sting.
Or get help from family.
Sting. Or family. But you're back at work. Are you more in your...
Yeah, I work part-time.
Part-time.
So, yeah, I can choose the clinics. I am very happy. And they're amazing little boys. And it's just great to see. Now they sleep, I've great energy.
I bet.
And it's fabulous. And if I was asked, would I do it again? Absolutely, in a heartbeat.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that story. It's an extraordinary adventure you've been on. And can't wish you and the boys and the three grown-ups and your husband the very best in everything you do, Maureen.
Can I say something to you, Ryan, before you go very quickly? I think I really say to anybody considering surrogacy abroad, please, please do your research. And one of the things to check, if you choose a clinic or anywhere you go to, please ask them in the contract, is NICU included? You need it.
NICU.
Yes. It was included for us, but there's a lot of clinics that don't. And if you have, everybody's journey is amazing until you come up with a problem.
What's that?
And when there's an issue, it's a serious issue being in a country like the Ukraine where there's a language barrier, you're in a hospital and you have no medical cover.
And is that medical cover, NICU?
Yes, that's the neonatal care.
Okay.
And that is needed if your babies are born early. And literally the way they do it over there is you have to provide your own medication for these babies if there's any issue.
Oh, good Lord. Okay, well, that's sage advice. Maureen, thank you so much.
Okay.
Mind yourself.
God
and
bless.
Best luck with everything. Thank you very much
Take
indeed.
Care.
Not
bye
at
bye
all.
Bye.
Thank you so much indeed. 7 minutes to 10.